This is Deep Blue, where we get the true life stories of BYU athletes, coaches, and fans. Here's your host, Jerem Jordan.
On today's show, we chat with one of the best playmakers in BYU football history. He left BYU, he came back, he thrived, he went to the NFL, he played in the Super Bowl, he coached at BYU too. He's seen some serious adversity on the field and off it. His name is Reno Mahe. Reno, what's up, man?
What's going on?
Okay, tell me about where your journey starts. I saw you were born in L.A., but then you move around. You eventually go to Brighton and Salt Lake City. But, like, what's the story before you go to Brighton?
Oh, so real quick, my parents immigrated from Tonga, both parents, met in Los Angeles, got married. I was born in 80 and then in Inglewood. So grew up in Inglewood, Hawthorne, Lenox, all down there in Southern California. And then
you're a kid in the early 90s.
Kid in the
Southern California.
In Southern California.
There's a lot going on.
You know, it's funny how much you don't realize where you grew up, where people are like, dude, you're from the hood. And I was like, you don't know what the hood is till you leave it. And so, again, but you're just a kid, so your surroundings, it is what it is. Like, you didn't, you know, you don't know what a basement is till you moved to Utah. So we moved in Utah in 92. So I think I was 11 turning 12. Anyways, I go to 6 elementary schools, 4 junior highs. Fortunately, I went to 1 high school. So that was Bryan High School. But then I moved from L.A. to West Valley. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, that was the ghetto. Like, I came from the ghetto. Like, this place is nice. Then you go from West Valley to Cottonwood Heights, and you're like,
it's different.
Oh, a little different. Like, but yeah, so that was kind of the, you know, where I grew up. And then from there, I came to Provo, BYU, Dixie, BYU, and then Philadelphia. And now I'm a Lehigh. I'm not a Pioneer, but a Sky Ridge. So I'm in Lehigh, 13 years in the same house. I'm Sky Ridge.
13 years in the same house.
13.
That's new for you, given what you just said about how much you moved.
Exactly. So it's a stability I wanted to give to my kids that I never had. I liked it, though. It taught me how to deal with all different types of people and whatnot that I felt like helped. But I just wanted to give my kids something that I didn't have. Neighborhood, friends, how they grew up and never had to move around. So it's just a different situation.
How many siblings do you have?
So I've got a little brother, 2 sisters, and a handful of adopted older brothers.
Gotcha. Like legally adopted or pseudo sort of at-like brothers?
First cousins that my parents raised are my brothers.
That lived with you and
same last name.
Like brothers and everything.
Yeah.
I love that.
Lived. And so they're my older brothers.
Gotcha. So you got a host of people.
Yeah.
And you have a big family yourself, do you not?
9 kids.
Woo!
5 boys, 4 girls. I will have 2 here at BYU this fall.
First, as freshmen?
My older boy is 1.5 years, and then my daughter's a freshman.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Good
That's
times.
That's exciting, man.
Good times.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about your family coming up on the show here. Okay, so you end up going to Brighton. You end up going to BYU, but I read you were a Utah fan growing up.
So my older brother played at the U.
So you're a Ute.
Yeah. Hate BYU.
You hate BYU.
Can't stand BYU. And so again, the whole BYU-Utah thing's foreign because we're from LA.
Are you an SC guy?
So I was an SC guy.
Okay.
So it was like you grew up SC, you didn't like UCLA. You know, it was the rich kids, blah, blah, blah. You move to Utah, older brother playing for the U. Coach Mack is like your uncle, love the dude. Go out of the Utah camp. I used to come to the BYU camps in my older brother's U of U jacket.
You were that kid.
I was that punk kid that showed up to the BYU camp in Utah gear just because you hate BYU. You're a Utah dude.
You felt like you were repping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm repping the U.
Yeah.
I'm repping my older brother.
So how do you end up at BYU?
I blame my uncle, my mom's brother. So I'm done. I'm already committed. I'm going to the U. Coach Mack, love the U.
And you're Gatorade Player of the Year in Utah. You're a big deal. You're
I'm all right.
You're wanted, right?
I'm all right. Yeah, yeah.
Did SC ever offer?
No, I didn't get any
would
offers.
Would you have gone to SC if they offered, given kind of growing up there?
I think my dad would have made me go there if they did, which it's funny because don't let me forget, I did get a chance to go to SC. So
from Dixie?
From Dixie, gotcha. Correct. Norm Chow's there at the time.
Oh, Norm, yeah,
so there's
there.
An interesting
okay.
story yep. behind that as well.
Okay, we'll get to that.
So I'm done. I'm going to the U. Everyone knows this. It's a done deal. My uncle convinced my mom for me to do a trip here on a weekend where I have a basketball game. But
A
high school basketball game. And so I end up playing, I think we were playing at Timpanogos. And so right after the game, just come do the trip. And so I was like, whatever, free weekend, snowmobiling, cool. Let's just go do it. So we go do it. Again, I got my U of U gear. Again, that punk kid, right? And it was like, hey, thanks for the visit, good time. So everyone always has this exit interview at the end. And Lavelle, Coach Edwards, my mom and dad were sitting in there. Hey, thanks, great visit, appreciate it. Walk out. My mom turns around and tells me, go tell Coach you're going to come here. And I'm like, serious? Like, and she's like, don't make me tell you again. So I turn around. Knock on his door like, Coach, my mom told me to tell you I'm coming here.
You even said it that way? Yeah. Not me.
Not me. My mom said, next day, I have to tell Coach Mac that I'm going to BYU now.
Ugh. So is I'm that on, hard?
Oh, that was the worst. Calling him, Coach, my mom says I'm going to BYU.
You're blaming your mom in this whole thing?
It's her fault. What do you mean blaming her? It's her fault. And so... he's just like, you, like, I know, I hate myself.
Ron can spit it, right?
Yeah. But I love that man. To this day, I still talk to him.
I think a lot of BYU fans really respect Ron O'Brien.
Yeah.
They love him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Coach Mack.
And he changed Utah into, you know what, we can have returned missionaries here. We can do that. Oh, in Polynesian culture?
Not only that, he stole that pipeline from Kahuku.
He changed the game and the rivalry. He really did.
BYU's pipeline that they had was Hawaii. Ron McBride changed that. And he started it with guys like Cow Tie. Like and there was things he did that he knew. And it was a done deal. That pipeline to the U gave them that chance. And I know people don't want to give Ron all the credit, but he is... Utah's where they are right now because of Coach Mack.
Yeah, I agree. They built off kind of what was started.
Absolutely.
Right? Enough about them.
So then, I'm at BYU. I'm committed. I'm coming to BYU now. So
when did your sort of, I guess, heart buy into that as opposed to this is what my mom wanted me to do? How long did that take? That's a big decision.
Yeah, probably not for a couple years.
Years.
Yeah.
So are you at BYU at this point when it kind of happens? Does it take time?
Jeremy, I don't think it made sense to me until I married Sonny and I'm back at BYU.
Okay. It takes a sec.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it took me a while to realize why my mom did what she did. And what made BYU, BYU.
Hmm.
And so it took a lot of heartache. It took a lot of growing up. It took a lot that, getting kicked out of BYU, not being accepted to come back, and then eventually being let back in to realize what my mom saw for me.
Hmm. Okay, so let's go there. You come to BYU as a freshman. Let's talk, and we'll get to sort of this journey, but on the way there, the first game of your freshman year, 98, at Alabama. Now this isn't
true freshman now.
Yep.
I'm 18.
Now this is Junior Mahe. This is a different you. You change your name later. We'll talk about that. At Alabama. All I remember from that game is Sean Alexander had five touchdowns. Like, he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But there's another dude that scores a touchdown in this game, another running back. It's you. It's Junior Mahe, right?
Yeah.
And BYU scores like with under a minute left to make it a 7-point game. It like looked and felt like it was close. It didn't. It wasn't actually probably that close, right?
Like, no, we still had a chance.
We had an onside kick. We didn't get it. They won.
But we still had the ball. I think we had a ball with the chance to go and tie. If I remember, maybe it's better than I remember.
Okay,
I swear, last time I saw the game,
that there
again,
was a throw or
that,
a play.
Correct.
That,
okay. We threw a pick.
Okay.
Yeah, we ended up throwing a
pick.
Let's go with that. We only lost by seven.
Let's go with that. Only seven. Listen, there is a moral victory in that. There really is. At Alabama?
For me, going...
What was that like?
Playing Jordan Beat Diggers.
to Alabama?
To Alabama.
Wow.
It was a cool experience, especially not... I had nothing to compare it to, right? Like college football, like I don't know if I fully took that in because I didn't know any better.
And that, like, is every game like this? Like,
right?
No.
Every game, when you play
New Mexico, it's not going to be like this.
You're Wyoming, it's not like that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no, it wasn't. But it was a cool experience. And to get the opportunity to play and then to actually be able to score and have some success in that game, it was quite the experience. So, to say the least.
So you play your freshman year. You're running back.
Correct.
You had a pretty good year. It was exciting. You know, you're getting some playing time. You're getting some run. And then, like you said, you get kicked out of BYU, and then you're not accepted back in. Now what are you going to do? How do you figure out, okay, I'm going to Dixie. I'm going to play junior college.
Was that hard? Yeah, it was tough because by this time I had the ability to go to any school now. And so was I going to follow Norm Chow to NC State? Norm Chow is at NC State with Philip Rivers.
Yep.
I take a recruiting trip out to NC State. Philip Rivers hosts me on this recruiting trip.
Okay.
At NC State.
How was it?
I think seems still segregated there.
In Raleigh?
Yes. So, I mean, I go with Philip Rivers, and it was like hanging out with all the white guys.
And are there any Polynesians on NC State's team?
No.
I'm guessing no, right?
No. And yeah. I think everyone thought I was Mexican. So then I go with one of the black wide receivers, and it's just like an all-black party. Like, so I was like, I got nowhere to fit in now. I don't know where I fit in.
You're a long way from home.
Yeah. Yep. And so I remember taking an earlier flight out of there.
Oh, you bounced? Yeah. You were done?
I think I had an evening flight. I was like, you know what? Just drop me to the airport. I'm getting out of here.
Oh, wow.
I was like, it ain't going to work. So instead of going there, I end up going to Dixie. And then while at Dixie, I played my sophomore year. So I played my true freshman year at BYU. I get let go from BYU. I'm going to UVSC at the time, also known as UVU now. I was going to redshirt and then come back to BYU. After I redshirted a year, BYU tells me, no, you haven't grown up yet. And so now I have to be gone for 2 years.
How did they know you haven't grown up yet?
They bring you in. You interview. I don't know. You know, maybe
they assessed you and didn't feel like you were ready.
Okay. And whatever information they have, they just don't feel like you've grown up yet. Which they were right. Like,
in hindsight, you agree?
Absolutely.
Interesting. Okay.
They were absolutely right on all accounts.
Gotcha. Why do you go to Dixie? How do you land at Dixie if you've got like an opportunity to go to other places?
So Dixie, it was more so that when you transfer, there's certain transfer rules.
You could come back without.
Yeah, there's
a
year. Yeah, there's.
So you wanted a JC.
Yeah, so I don't want to waste a year of football.
Yeah.
Because I've already sat out a year.
You already did a year.
I already did a year.
Okay.
So there are certain rules about transferring and this and that. So if I remember correctly, Dixie was an option. And then from there, I can go anywhere I wanted to.
Okay, so why Dixie?
I knew Coach Croshaw. So I knew the head coach there, loved the man, and it was just a good fit. It was a good time to, there was a lot of just different factors out there.
And you switched to receiver at this point?
No, I'm still running back.
You're still a running back?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm still running back.
Gotcha.
So
have you changed your name to Reno? Because you went by junior as a freshman. When do you change the name? I want to go by Reno now.
I want to know if it was before I came back to BYU. I think is when I left Dixie to come back, or I couldn't remember if I changed it at Dixie or if I changed it to come back. I don't remember which.
Why? And is Junior? Are you a Junior?
So my family calls me Junior.
They call you Junior.
Correct.
Are
I
you
went
a
by. I am. I'm named after my dad.
Gotcha.
Reno is my middle name.
What's your first name?
Satecki.
Satecki.
Satecki Reno Mahe Junior.
Gotcha. So I'm named by Junior as a kid. You go by Junior. At
I go by Junior. Yeah. No, but I went by Reno in high school. Like football, it was just differentiating between those that know me from
gotcha
football and those my family.
So Uriah Leotawa has this. So my Lopa for those who are close to him. Uriah for everybody else.
Correct.
Yeah.
So my family calls me Junior.
Gotcha.
And then when I came back, well, yeah. So then I changed it when I came back.
Gotcha. Were you always sold on coming back? Because you could easily have felt perhaps burned by the university in some way and be
right.
salty.
Right.
Walk me through those feelings of, yes, I do want to go back to BYU.
So when I was getting ready to go to Dixie, my dad was real disappointed. Like I'll never forget. This was like that one turning point in my life that I knew I was going to make it in the NFL. I was getting ready and my dad was just, I mean, already heartbroken about getting kicked out of school. But now I'm not going back to BYU and I'm electing to go to a junior college. And he just couldn't understand it. And I said to him, I was like, look, Dad, you want me to play in the NFL. That's, you know, that's been your dream for me since I was a kid. And I told him that day in the driveway, I'll never forget that in Provo, I was like, I will play in the NFL. I promise you I'll make it in the NFL. And so just trust me on this. Let me go to Dixie. Let me do this. So I go to Dixie. I'm playing running back. And teams have like 10 guys in the box. I mean, I've heard of 8 in the box. I've heard of 9 in the box. Well, and they're not even covering someone out there. Like, it was just
audible. Just throw it to them.
It was so bad. So I go to Coach Croshaw. I'm like, I played wide receiver in high school. Like, I can play wide receiver. You know, like, I'm a pretty good receiver. So we had really good running backs behind me. You know, we had some good running backs. My little cousin, Ryan Felipe, a kid from Hawaii. Like, we had some really good running backs. So I was like, just let me go play receiver. So that's when I went and played receiver.
So you changed midseason?
It was like after the first couple games.
You're like, enough of this.
Yeah.
I'm tired of running
this is silly.
10 in the box. Okay.
Yeah.
So when in the driveway, you're talking to your dad. How do you know you're going to play in the NFL? How do you know that? Just ton of self-confidence? You knew what you were capable of?
Yeah, there's just, I don't know, maybe it had something to do with the Alabama game.
Like, I scored at Alabama. I am capable of hanging with Sean Alexander.
Right?
Let's go.
He had 5, but I mean, I had 1.
You combined for 6.
Yeah.
How about that?
But I there was just something that day. I just, like, I just knew I could play in the NFL. There was, you know, and I knew that's what my dad wanted. I knew that was a dream of mine as well.
He didn't like your process.
Yeah.
But the end game was going to be the same.
And
on the
so
same page that way.
He got behind it.
Did it take a sec for him to get behind it?
Yeah. I mean,
it's quite the move.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Dixie. It's different.
It was. But he still come in support.
That's awesome.
He was still there.
That's awesome. Okay. So when you're at Dixie, is it always the plan to go back to BYU, or are you, like you said, you're courted by other teams at this point?
Yeah, I started taking recruiting trips. I remember I even tripped out to UNLV because Coach Kanu Matalolo was out there. And
Now the Navy head coach, longtime Navy head coach.
Correct. And Norm Chow and my dad come looking for me during this process. I'm trying to remember what time, whether it was during Dixie or at the end of Dixie, like after, during the recruiting part of it. It had to have been after because they had the season. And so now he's.
In context here, Norm wanted to replace Lavelle Edwards. Interviewed for it. Didn't end up getting that gig. It was Gary Kruns. So, but Norm in the meantime is not sitting. He goes to NC State. He goes to USC. He goes to the Titans.
He
goes to Utah and Hawaii.
So he's at USC at this time.
Yeah. So yeah, Norm wanted to be the heir to the net. Unfortunately, did not get it, right? Robert and I kind of felt the same thing after Bronco. There's a similar thing there. But Norm's going after you at this point.
Yeah, so Norm is—
This is after the 2000 season going into 01.
Correct. So Norm is— He's— Him and my dad come looking for me at Sonny's house.
And they knew you'd be at Sonny's house.
By this time, while at Dixie, I wanted to marry Sonny. And so—
Are you dating at this point?
Yes. So me and Sonny had been dating for maybe a year.
You met at BYU.
I'm at UVSC. She's at BYU. So me and a buddy—
Sonny's on the volleyball team.
She's on the volleyball team. This 99, she's freshman, All-American.
She's legit.
6'2", I'm 5'9". It was just not meant to be. Me and a buddy are walking down the road. Her and her sister pick us up to give us a ride to my dad's shop. I walk in my dad's shop. My dad meets her, and my dad's like talking to me in Tongan, like, "Hey, you should take this girl out." And I was like, "Dude, look at her, man. You think she want to take me? Like, she's 6'2", man. She don't want to go out with me." But I'm like a dropout, and she's all world over there at BYU, right? And so we just keep running into each other. So me and Sonny are dating. First month or two at Dixie, we're not dating. And I remember, and it's actually his mom's my Brent Herring.
Brent Herring, who's like the American Samoa national team coach, which is cool in baseball.
So his mom is my institute teacher at Dixie.
Wait, say that one more time for the edit. Like Brent Herring, his mom.
Brent Herring, his mom is my institute teacher at Dixie. And I'm taking her class, and I remember walking out of her class, and I'm not even dating Sonny at this time. We were not dating at this time, and I remember saying that I'm gonna marry Sonny. I'm done. It was like a marriage class, like a marriage.
You're in the mood.
Yeah. And so I still remember walking out of this institute building, like the whole like environment outside under the trees, sun, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, so I go, I start courting her back, and I'm like, I'm going back. So now I want to go back. I want to be with Sonny. And the worst part about all this, Sonny years later was like, I would have came to USC with you.
You think you have to go to BYU to be with Sonny.
Correct.
It all makes sense.
Yeah.
It all makes sense.
But that was probably one of the biggest factors. Another was I always wanted to come back and finish what I started at BYU. Like I just felt this urge to get back and,
say it. You were going to say it. A redemptive story.
Yeah. Yes. I just wanted to.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if it's redeem, but I wanted to redeem my family name. I wanted to.
You felt you had done something there.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And so that was, that was a, and then coming back, it all felt right. Like it all made sense of why my mom wanted me to be there. Like that's where it wasn't until like the first day back on campus that I realized what made BYU great. And so it taught me that there's more to life than just football. You know, my freshman year, it was like, no, I'm football. What? I just scored a touchdown against Alabama. What do you mean? Like, you think you're above, you know, you're better than everything. It took that experience to make me realize that you're not, you know, just because you're a football player, just because you're football. No, that's not what life's all about. And so I don't know if I'd have learned that lesson anywhere else had it not been for that.
You had to go through that.
I had to go through that. Mm. Yeah.
When you're interviewed again to assess whether you're ready to come back, are you nervous?
Not at all.
Because you've failed the one, but now you're like, no, I'm good. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to ace this.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was, I mean, and there were people Lucky Fanoimoana. He's passed, but he was a huge integral part of that. He worked up at the Honor Code's office, and it was guys like him, my uncle, Paula Ico, who was in the Bishopric Stake Presidency. They all took me under their wings and was like, showed me that path. But you had to be willing to, you know, you had to be humble enough to realize all those things, to realize why your mom made you come here. And for that, I've always been like BYU forever indebted to that, you know, on top of my wife. And so, yeah, it was those kind of lessons I think I needed at that point in my life that I don't know I would have got anywhere else. Hmm. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have.
When did you marry Sonny?
May 2001.
Oh, so before your first semester back, I guess, playing.
Yeah.
You're married now. You're a new guy. You're going by Reno. You're married. Yeah. You're back at BYU. This is a pretty exciting time. Okay. And then the good times keep rolling because in 01, all of a sudden this team starts 12-0. I mean, this is – so at this point, I'm a senior in high school. I'm fully engaged in every moment.
Where'd you go to high school?
Copper Hills.
Okay, so you're down the street.
I'm not too far away, right? I'm coming to every game I can. You know, Tulane, 70 points. Holy shnikes. Gary Crone's the quarterback. It's Brandon Doman, Luke Staley. There's a bunch of NFL guys on the defense too. This is awesome, man.
We were deep.
You were – yes, that team reminds me of 90 in a way because you guys did something spectacular and you're in the top 10. And we'll get to this, but the way the season finished unfortunately makes it so people don't still feel that way about that team. Yeah. Luke Staley gets injured. We'll get to it in a sec. But, okay, when do you realize that 0-1 team's going to be special? Because it's a new head coach. It's not Lavelle. It's a totally different thing, different unis. The whole deal, you know, from the last couple of years or whatever. What's that like in 01?
It was and I'm newly married. And so it was just such an amazing ride. It was great to be back here. You feel like you're redeeming your family's name. You know what I mean? Like all of that whole redemption was just an amazing feeling. And then go through that Utah game, and we beat Utah. I mean, regardless, no matter what, how it ended, we beat Utah.
And that's one of the more dramatic, amazing finishes.
Finishes.
You're down 11 with 6 minutes to go.
Yes, yes.
And the year before was a miracle, right? You're watching this from Dixie, but
yes.
Lavelle's last game, and now it's like, oh, Luke Staley and everybody, and you. And we'll get to the story around you playing in that game.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, we'll do it in just a second, but yeah, you beat Utah.
Yeah, so it – as far as the end of that, as a player, it was one of those things where injuries, but we let the BCS get the best of us. You know, going out to that game, knowing they
talking about Hawaii?
Yes.
So BYU's 12-0. You've beaten Mississippi State, but Luke Staley breaks his leg. You went
correct
on a field goal. You have an incredible game, by the way, in that game. What were the numbers? 14 catches, 181 yards, 2 touchdowns. 12-0. That week, you find out you're not going to be able to go to the Fiesta Bowl. They're just not going to invite you, right?
We don't find out till we're in Hawaii.
Oh.
This is what I mean. Like,
oh, okay.
So
when do you get to Hawaii?
Yeah. We're still –
like on Thursday?
We might have went out on a Wednesday. Like I'm trying to remember how early we went out because you usually go out earlier.
Yeah. You're 12-0, but no Luke Staley.
You're
not exactly sure how this is going to go.
But even then, like, it was Hawaii. Like, we felt like, yeah.
And they end up being pretty good that year, by the way.
Yeah.
9 or 10 win team. Yeah.
And then we find out Fiesta Bowl is not going to take us.
So they told the team. Somebody told the team.
No, they released it. Like,
it was public.
It was public. Like, it was public knowledge. They're not going to, regardless of the game.
You're ranked like eighth right now. You're totally in position.
13-0. It doesn't matter. They won't take us.
Do you think that's because Luke broke his leg?
No, I don't think it had anything to do with Luke.
You think it was because this
I don't know if I'm allowed to have – who knows if you're allowed to have opinions anymore. But my own personal opinion of that whole deal is – BYU always gets the short end of it. I don't know if it's because we're Mormon. I don't know. But I always feel like we get the short end of it because of our religion. Like, that's just me.
And that's a deep conversation.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, but that's whole thing.
We are any
other school. We're Utah in that situation in the Mountain West. No brainer.
Now, a little context. 98 and 99, Marshall and Tulane. BYU helps those teams also finish undefeated, by the way, by losing bowl games those years. You were on the 98 team. They finish undefeated, and they don't sniff the BCS either. But BYU had a bigger brand and had won a national championship and had produced a Heisman 11 years before. So it was a little different. Yeah, I feel you. But there had been teams that hadn't been on the inside, if you will, that hadn't made it. And even 5 years before BYU didn't get in, got to the Cotton Bowl, didn't get into the Big Bowl system of that era.
There.
So there's sort of a precedence here for being left out, right? And now it's the next chapter.
And so we get left out.
Does that affect the entire game?
Guys are swimming. Like, some guys swam day of the game. You tell me how much anyone cares.
Mm.
Like, I joke around with Coach June Jones about this because he, close friend of mine, and he was the head coach of Hawaii. And I'm like, no one cared for that game. I know we're 12-0. We're going to Liberty Bowl regardless.
You've already accepted it, or you're about to?
No.
Because you're the Mountain West champ.
There's no choice.
You're in.
We're in.
Unless you had gone to the Fiesta, but you know you're not.
We're not anymore. Okay. So, no, it's like, whatever. It's honestly, like, going into that game, it was whatever. Outside of pride, and if you look at the stats of that game, you can see who has pride in the game, but the feeling was whatever.
That's a massive bummer, man.
But it was I get it, though. Like, I get it. Like, I get you want to have an undefeated season. But it's like, yeah, you won the Liberty Bowl. I get it. I get the mentality. But at the end of the day, as a player, like, you go through your ranked top 10. I don't know. That's a hard pill to swallow. So I get
You're
it.
You're saying to be motivated for that
game. To be motivated for that game.
Gotcha.
You know, like it was such a hard, that was a hard pill to swallow, man. Because it was such a special year, right?
It was very special.
And there were so many things. 9/11.
That Mississippi State game had been rescheduled. That was the game you were supposed to play that week.
Correct. And they had done a lot better early on. And then we play them when they're losing season. Like, there were so many different things like that, that by the time we're out there on that trip and we're hoping for this, that was the only thing left to top off that season, was getting that invite to a BCS. And when we didn't get it, it was just like, which is a bad attitude. I get it. But it also makes us human, right? Like,
yeah. And then that Hawaii game, unfortunately, doesn't go well. And Hawaii's uber motivated to play BYU always.
Yeah.
That's still a program record points allowed, by the way, 72. That was a terrible day, just all around, like you mentioned. It was tough. So then you go to Liberty Bowl, and Louisville's pretty good in that game. They're a 10-win team that year.
Yeah.
And you lose that one, and the season's over. Is it weird when that season ends? Because it went so well, you guys were incredible. It's an amazing team. You look at the roster there, and what you guys did, led the country in scoring. You have an amazing year with 91 catches, 1,211 yards, 9 touchdowns. How do you feel after that season?
It was just everyone was hurt.
Mm.
Brandon got hurt in the Hawaii game.
Separated both shoulders, right?
Yeah. Like, Luke was already out before that game.
Wins the Doak Walker for best running back. Yeah. On crutches, he accepts the award. It's like,
again, a lot of injuries. So it just ends hurt. Like, the season, it was hurt. I was hurt. I don't think I finished that game, the bowl game. A lot of it was from the Hawaii game, but I still tried to play in that bowl game. But, it was just, it ended hurt. But I think a lot of it was just our hurt feelings from not being accepted into the BCS, to be honest with you.
And that makes sense.
So
that makes sense. Okay, back to the Utah game. So the Monday of the Utah game, if I recall correctly, you have an appendectomy. Walk me through that and that week, because you play in the Utah game that Saturday and somehow have this incredible game and help lead BYU to a victory. Like, what in the world? Talk me through that. I've heard Brandon Doman's end of this story, but I want to hear
really?
Yours. Yeah. This is about you.
So here's the funny part. Sunday, my wife flies in from a volleyball tournament. Me and some of the husbands go pick up our wives, but I'm hurting Sunday night. So as we go pick them up, these husbands are helping their wives carry their bags, and I'm just kind of like slouched over. I'm like not feeling good. And my wife just kind of looks at me like all perturbed on why am I not carrying her bag, but I'm hurting. We get back to our apartment. I'm laying in the tub, like just stomach is bugging.
And it's the day after you played at Wyoming.
Yes.
So maybe if, maybe it's from the game or something. Right?
I don't
Who
know.
Knows?
And then she has a team meeting, so she leaves me. And I'm laying there in the tub, and she knew something was up because when she comes back, I'm still laying in there. Like something's just not right. On the way to the hospital, car dies.
Oh!
Yeah. So we get a hold of Dwayne Busby. He comes, takes us to the hospital, and then come to find out. So this is like now this is we're into the morning hours of Monday. It's late, like maybe 11 p.m. or something like that, where Brandon Doman is leaving. You know how they do those 10:30 p.m. KSL spots for sports?
Yep.
Late at night.
Yep. Like, coach's show back in the day was Sunday nights.
Correct.
Yep.
So he's leaving it as I call him to come give me a blessing.
From Salt Lake? Was he up there?
No.
Or he was in Provo.
Provo. Okay. He was at the satellite spot
gotcha.
In Provo. So he comes, gives me a blessing, leaves, and then they, I don't know, Monday morning to, I don't know, whatever time in the morning, they give me, they do the appendectomy, the surgery. So then I'm not at practice Monday, not at practice Tuesday. Now the media is starting to come around to it, like, then they, you know, they find out. But mind you, we're still undefeated. We're, you know,
you're 11-0,
top 25 team in the country. Like yeah. we're having a
no, you're 10-0 waiting for Utah. This is for the Mountain West Conference Championship. This is a big game.
Big game. And so, so many funny stories about that weekend. I always knew I was going to play. I told myself I was going to play, and one of the things I did again, don't do this at home, but I felt like if I didn't take any pain medicine, then I knew I will know if I can handle the pain.
Mm.
So I didn't, after the surgery, I didn't do any pain medicine.
Wow.
So I wanted to see how my body copes with the pain. So Monday morning I get up, I don't walk around much. Tuesday I'm trying to walk around the hospital. Like, I'm trying to, like, okay, like, no, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to play. Like, there's way, it's freaking Utah. I'm not playing in this game.
So, you just had an appendectomy, and you're like, yeah, I'm good in 5 days.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So,
I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, one of these days, I sneak out of the hospital. And I go to the practice.
You sneak out?
So I just, but I wanted to be able to just walk.
So you don't check out officially? You're
no.
Like, just,
I just,
leave.
I leave.
It's probably Wednesday because Thursday is like walk around,
yeah.
walk throughs, right?
So
Wednesday is like a practice.
Yeah. So I show up to practice, just kind of like, no, I'm going to play. Like, I had my mind made up.
You're the little wristband still on.
Yes. I go back to the hospital.
You did?
Yes. I had to go back.
To like check out.
Yes. So, but I knew I'm going to do it. And the best were stories that came out. You should hear people that were on the radio during this time. Oh, his parents are stupid for letting him do this. Who would let their kids do this? Utah fans. Oh, he didn't even have surgery. Like, it was awesome. It's like the whole story was made up. Like, all right. Like,
you're like, my appendix says otherwise.
Yeah. So there was Yeah, there's a lot of fun stories behind the story, and it was just a magical game. Like,
do you remember your numbers from that game?
I don't. I remember scoring a touchdown before the half. Like, I remember Crockett. I hit a corner route on him, smash him out. Brandon, I knew he was going to give it to me in the corner. And the ball, as I looked for it, it was thrown inside this way. And so I had to turn back around. Like, it was a fun play. But at the end of the day, it was all worth it. Blood on your jersey, your stitches ripped. Like, they had to.
How bad was it?
It was bad. Like, they had to put a duct tape on it. So
on your skin?
Yeah.
Over the stitches?
Yeah. It was.
At halftime, before the game, after the game?
It might have been like third quarter where it was like bleeding.
On the field.
Yeah, it was like bleeding into my stitches.
Can you see it on your jersey on
yeah.
the TV broadcast?
Oh, afterwards. Okay. There has to be. You can see blood on the jersey afterwards, but it was Utah.
It's a Kurt Schilling sock.
Yeah.
That is for you.
It was Utah, and it was so worth it. Mm. So
5 catches, 94 yards, and a touchdown. That would have been good if you were healthy, let alone with an appendix, right? Out?
Against Utah.
Holy schnackies. Yeah, that game is an all-timer, the comeback, the Luke. You're in the formation, I think, on the left side on the game-winning touchdown? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
It's just chaos.
Yeah.
That was a loud moment. Do you remember, like, when Luke scores that touchdown, I think that's a top 5 loudest moment in LaBella to receive
him. You go deaf. Like,
did you hear nothing?
Nothing.
It's so loud you hear nothing.
It's so loud you hear nothing, but you hear nothing most of the game.
You block it out.
It's the focus. People don't realize, like, you go deaf for so much of the game. Like, you just hear nothing. Everything is just trained. Your body's just trained, especially for receivers, because we don't hear the quarterback. So everything is just on movement.
Mm.
The ball moves. The safeties move, the corners move, linebackers move, and then your body just goes to where you have trained your body to go to and do what it's supposed to do. So you're most of the time you're just like you're deaf.
It's interesting. I'm not on the same level as you in any way, shape, or form. But there are moments where I've played a game or whatever. My wife's like, could you hear Venna and Tate, my 2 kids? And I was like, no. Like, I'm not, and again, I'm like single A baseball compared to you, major league. Hall, you know what I mean? Yeah. Okay. So that's an incredible season. And then you end up, playing 0-2, and then you're an undrafted free agent in the NFL. What was that experience like to get on with the Eagles and then play for a bunch of seasons and Andy Reid and play in a Super Bowl? What a journey for you. And you fulfilled what you said on the driveway with your dad when you're kicked out of BYU. But that's a very vulnerable moment.
Like, yeah.
I'm going to play in the NFL. You did it.
I go out to the Eagles, and a lot of it had to do with Vi Sekahema. So I don't know Vi at this time. We're actually distantly related. Actually, like, we go to the same family reunion. We're related through our Otay V side. But I've never met Vi. But Vi knows I'm coming, gets a hold of me.
Like, to try out.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to try out. And here's a funny story about that. Vi tells me, hey, you and your family come stay in my basement. So
you're like, I know what a basement is. I've moved to Utah.
Yeah, exactly. But Vi has a nice basement.
I'm sure he did.
And so we're staying in Vi's basement. I'm going through training camp, mini camp, training camp. And right now the Eagles have Deuce Daly, Brian Westbrook, Karell Buckhalter. They only keep 3 tailbacks. And so I think Vi tells me later, I didn't know this at the time. Vi doesn't think I'm going to make the team because they have these 3 all-stars on the team and they only keep 3. And so fast forward, first week, I make the team. And so Vi pulls me in and he's like, or Elder Sekahema, sorry.
Elder Sekahema.
Now it's Elder Sekahema. Yeah. So Elder Sekahema pulls me in. He's like, hey, nephew, you can't be living in my house making more money than me. So me and my wife had to go get a place.
That's hilarious.
I'm like, man, I'm Tongan. You can't kick me out. Anyways, it was Vi, Elder Sikahama, that told me that you need to go do punt return.
Because that's what he did.
Yes. But he's like, if you want a shot at even making practice squad, you need to go do punt return. And so I was just like, okay. I mean, I made it as far as I've made it in everything in my life because I feel like I'm coachable. Teach me something, I learn, I listen, and I apply. And so when he told me that, I started going doing punt return. I might have had a handful. I wasn't a punt returner at BYU by any means. And so I go do punt return, and that's what actually they kept me because I could do punt. I could catch punts. You didn't have to return it. Andy just wanted, Coach Reed just wanted the ball. He just wanted someone that can secure the ball and give it back to our offense. Let's Donovan McNabb, who gets hundreds of millions, let him deal with it. But I need that ball. And so I was safe for it. And that's what I made the team for 5 years. And every time I go back there, I just kept thinking about how many diapers catching that ball is going to provide. So I'm going to catch that ball. No matter how scared I am, I'm catching that ball.
It provided a lot of diapers.
That's a lot of diapers.
Yeah. I had never really connected the dots between you being sort of Vi point 2.0. In terms of, okay, at BYU, Vi told me, I wanted to be the running back. I wanted to be the guy. And he said, once I realized I wasn't going to crack, you know, the starting job, I wasn't going to be that guy, they put me at punt return and kick return. And on punt return, he said, I decided I would never fair catch again. I was always going to take it, no matter how reckless that was, because I was mad at BYU. And then he makes this career out of himself. He goes to the NFL. Yes, he dabbles, you know, at running back, but he's a returner.
Yes.
And then he finds himself punching the field goal post, and he's
Philly's all-star returner.
He's amazing. He's
an all-pro or Pro Bowl returner,
yes.
Not just a returner.
Yes,
he's a Pro Bowl returner.
So, in terms of him, when he tells you that, that's from his own experience of like you can stick if you do this.
Correct.
That's amazing advice his own career.
No one wants to do punt return. It is the worst position in football. No one wants
too much risk.
You stand back there, the balls, the way they're kicking it, like you don't know what the elements, the wind, and
you're in Philly too, so you're playing in the elements, like you said, all the time.
Are your guys blocking? Are they not blocking? These are NFL punters. Like, it is the worst position. No one wants to do it. Like, the only people that want to do it are those that there's no choice. Like, I have to do it.
Do you see a diaper when it's coming down? Yeah. That's like the visual.
That is the thought.
Cash? Is it,
before every punt, that's the thought. Like, I'm catching if I don't catch this, I can't buy my kids diapers.
That's hilarious. Okay, so you stick in the NFL for how many years? Five?
5 years.
5 years. Did you ever envision you'd be able to make it for 5 years like that? That's incredible.
No. I thought I'd make it, but 5 years.
And it's probably year to year, right? Where you're like, I still got to make the team every year.
There might have been one year where I was like, I felt like, you know what, looking around the competition, I'm going to make the team. I might have had that once out of the 5 years. Mm. But every year I was on the bubble. But I can say I've never been cut. Like when I went to camp, I made the team.
So when you're done, you chose to be done?
Yeah. Nice. I was done after four. My agent was trying to shop me. I almost went and played for Norm, Coach Chow at Tennessee. And so my agent, I believe, overpriced me for them. And so I was good. I was good to be done after four. And then the first game, the Eagles went and played the Packers, and they had the punt returners lost the game for them. Literally lost the game. They had a couple fumbles. One of them was at the end of the game. Packers kicked a field goal, I believe, to win that game. I was on the first flight back.
For your last year?
For my fifth year.
For the fifth year. Okay.
Yeah. That was amazing. The coolest year ever.
You're on Scully? Well, because they wanted you so bad? Why was it cool?
It was just like the very first game I come back, mind you, I've been there 4 years. This has never happened. Punt returners fumbled. the whole game. I come back. We're playing the Redskins. And I got maybe a yard or two on the first one, the first punt. I got a standing ovation from the Philadelphia Eagles.
Who have booed Santa Claus.
They booed me. And I never did anything wrong. Like,
just Philly.
It's Philly. Yeah. I never forget this. We had just won a battle against Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football. I'm just high as a kite. Like, it was such a great game. We ended up winning. I come running off the field, and this Philadelphia fan just right above the tunnel. Hey, Reno. Drunk as all get out. You're only on the team because you're Mormon.
With Andy Reid.
And I was like, just ruined my night.
Like, come on, man.
What? We just won the game. But, oh, I got to love the Eagle fans.
That's hilarious. Okay, you play in a Super Bowl. Do you receive the opening kick?
We kick off.
You kick off. Okay.
Yeah, we kicked off.
Do you get the second half kick?
No.
You never got the kick.
I was.
The flashes.
Oh,
did you have that moment?
Kickoff.
Every kickoff.
We're getting ready to kick the ball off. Let me think. How did this work? I just remember. The coolest thing is being on the field for the very first kickoff. Like, you're on the field and you're getting ready to. Where was I on the. Now I've got to go back and see where the heck I was on the field.
It was Super Bowl 39.
Yeah.
2005. February 2005.
And I just remember flashes. Just. Like, it was crazy. It was so cool. But I think it was a touchback or something. I don't think we had a return. I'm trying to remember what it was. But no, at this Super Bowl, I either was an off returner. I was on the return team, but J.R. Reid was our actual kickoff returner. I was just punt return.
What was it like with Andy Reid? Obviously a BYU guy, member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as you mentioned, crushing it with the Kansas City Chiefs, now won a Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Saw the earth. I mean, I can't get too emotional. I want to keep dry eyes in here. but Andy, till this day, Coach Reid is still someone that's always there for me. And so, more importantly, I know you asked this about this earlier, but when everything happened with Elsie, that was probably one of the most important coaching he ever gave me. And so, with regards to protecting my family, because he had went through something like that. He had lost a child. And so his coaching, his advice during that time, I'll forever be grateful to him in where my family is right now and my marriage and the coaching he gave me during that time.
Let's talk about Elsie. So in 2016 – you have a 3-year-old daughter, Elsie, who unfortunately passes away in an accident at home. It's been 5 years. What have you thought about? What has affected you from that tragedy 5 years ago to now?
I think the biggest takeaway for me is the beliefs I hold and how important those are now. You know, I have a belief in the plan of salvation and how much that means to me and how important that is to me that I will be with her again. As far as effect, I tried it during that 2017 season, but it's hard to be in that indoor facility, the indoor football field. Like, I try, you know, there's times where I'll come back and just, it's almost like therapy, try to overcome having to run off that field to head to the hospital. And so it just.
That's where you were when you heard?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was on the field, we had practice, and I ran out, jumped in my car, and ran off to the hospital. So that whole part, you know, just that is probably the hardest effect, like, coming to BYU, coming again, trying it that whole next year. It was hard on the mind. It was hard on everything. And so when that whole transition with Ty and everything, it was, matter of fact, Copper Hills, how about this? I was leaving Copper Hills when I made that decision that I'm done. Mm. Like, I remember leaving recruiting. It was recruiting time. I'm leaving Copper Hills, and I called my wife, and I was just like, I can't do it no more. I just need to just...
You were the running backs coach at BYU.
Yeah.
A couple seasons.
And I just remember that time. And then it made it easier with the transition, new coaches on the offensive side. That whole thing just...
I didn't know that you felt like you didn't want to do it anymore. Because they end up letting the whole offensive staff go as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that worked out. That was the perfect transition. I didn't ever want to feel like I quit on Kalani. I just couldn't do it no more. And so that transition helped.
Were you affected by what happened with LC with coaching?
Yeah. Like, it just – it was hard because that's where I was when it happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just as a father, like, feeling like you weren't there.
Mm. That's a hard feeling, I would bet.
You know? And so Yeah. And that's why I'm pretty stingy about my time now as far as just being home, taking my kids to practices, being with my kids. I just, you know, I don't ever want to be beholden to that time no more. Like, it's being with my wife and kids.
So that changed something philosophically for you?
Yeah.
And how you spend your time. Gotcha. You mentioned you have 9 children. That's a lot of practices to go to.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time. What's that like as a with you and Sonny?
Organized chaos. Actually, no organized, just chaos. It's just chaotic, and it's just worth it. Like, it's so much fun.
What makes it worth it?
I like to feel like this is what it is. Like, I think sometimes we chase this eternal perspective, but I feel like that feeling you have with your family and you're here and what you're doing with them on a daily basis and the joys. Yeah, sometimes things are hard, schedules are hard, but when you slow everything down and you spend all this time with your kids, especially with your wife, that it's just, there's just so much. I'm just so grateful to have that opportunity. I'm grateful to have my family. I'm just grateful to be in the position to be able to do that with my wife and kids.
So you're in the moment. You're living in the now.
Absolutely.
I love that, Reno, because I don't like the idea of chasing something that's always out in front of me. Why can't I have some of it now?
Yeah.
It's like, well, wait. I want to enjoy this time together now. I think that what you just said – relative to what you learned with Elsie's passing is really important about, you know what? I want to be present. I think we can all learn from that.
You ever heard of the Mexican fisherman?
No.
It's a story, so go check it out. It's not a long story, but it's a story. It's Mexican fisherman in a nutshell. He's enjoying his life. He goes out, grabs fish, comes out, chilling with wife, hanging out with his kids, homies. Next morning goes out, comes back. A tourist sees him. It's like, you know, if you go out just a little bit longer, you could get more fish and you could start a company. You could sell it. You could make all this money. You could take it to the market. You could just millions. And then the Mexican fisherman's like, sweet. How long would it take to do that? He's like, you know, maybe 7-10 years, whatever the timeline is. And he's like, oh, okay. And then what? Then he can go fish, come hang out with his wife and kids when it's just like, you don't realize you can do those things now. But sometimes we're chasing things that the world tells us we want, we need. We don't really need it, you know? And so to be able to give up a nice car and just keep the car I'm driving now, because then I can spend more time with my kids, I'm good. I'm going to spend more time with my kids. Like, I'm going to hang out. I'm not going to chase that. All I'm chasing is free time to hang out with my kids.
Mm.
I keep saying kids, but mostly my wife.
Yeah. When you were with the Eagles, you embodied this as well. You took a part-time job in the offseason as an NFL player? Chickies and Pete's?
Chickie and Pete's?
Yeah. What NFL player gets a job in the summer? What is this?
It was a trip because I lived in Houston in the off season.
But why were you living in Houston?
a lot of guys, they go back to wherever their home base is. My yeah. mother-in-law lives in Houston.
Gotcha.
So I wanted to get a house for my wife next to her mom. Mm. So we were just blocks from her. So we built a house there. So it was fine. But there are certain times during the off season in Philadelphia where you had to get four lifts in. And they paid you for it. So you're going to think I'm crazy, but so my cousins all work for the airlines. So I figured a system out where I could fly back and forth to Philadelphia for like $60.
Okay.
Buddy passes.
Yeah.
Buddy right? passes. So yeah, I figured cool. out a little system, and then I'd go out Monday morning. I'd get two lifts in, but you had to have 24-hour break. So I worked out Monday. I didn't work out Tuesday. I worked out Wednesday, and I flew home Wednesday morning. So I got all four lifts in within Monday morning to Wednesday morning. And so Monday night and Tuesday night, my wife and kids are back in Houston, so I had nothing to do. So guys were always like, would go play video games or go to the mall, and you're spending money. So I thought we kept going to Cheeky and Pete's, and Pete would always hook us up. And so finally one day I was just like talking to the manager there, and I'm like, hey, if I worked here, would Pete pay me? And he was like, heck yeah. So Pete paid me. And then Pete gave me bonuses.
Okay.
Whenever he got on the news, and he got on the news.
That was his big story, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is this guy doing?
So it was the way I looked at it, Jaron was just wasted time, was wasted money. And so since I was away from my wife and kids, I didn't want to waste that time doing nothing or just spending money. So I just got a job. And so it was an easy job.
Cheeky and Pete's.
Cheeky and Pete's.
I got to go. I'm in Philadelphia.
So
that's hilarious, dude.
It worked out great.
That's awesome. Okay. I know you're into other causes as well outside of your family. You've talked about the Firefighters Challenge. What is that, and what are you doing with
it? Well, it's Mental Health for Heroes. So we started a nonprofit called Mental Health for Heroes. And
super important right now. There's a lot of discussion about mental health, which is awesome.
More importantly, with our first responders. Mm. So mental health.
I don't really think about them in this.
So Mental Health for Heroes, the heroes part is our first responders, our officers, firefighters, EMT. In statistically, for occupation out there, firefighters and police officers are number one, number two in divorce and suicide.
Wow.
Per capita. Hmm. And so it's a need. It's personal for my wife and I, because when I was coaching, they were the first ones to show up to help my wife. And so it's something that's been personal for us. And so what we do is just eliminate the hurdles to go get therapy. Co-pays, setting up, training good therapists to make sure that they can deal with that kind of PTSD and be PTSD proficient.
That's amazing. So
that's how we got tied in to the Firefighters Challenge. So the proceeds from the Firefighters Challenge, whatever they raise covering their costs, anything extra gets donated to our foundation.
What is the Firefighters Challenge?
Firefighters Challenge, they call it the hardest 2 minutes in sports. So it's pretty cool. If you Google it and look up the competition where they go up five flight of stairs, they pull up this, you know, this heavy deal, run back down. They have to touch every stairs on the way back down. Then they hammer this deal where, you know, they have to hammer something. Then they zigzag, pull a hose, you know, then they squirt a target, squirt. They hose a target, and then they pick
you
up.
You and I use squirters. Yeah. They use hoses, right? Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they pull like 180-pound body, a full length. They have to pull it backwards.
And that's incredible.
It's coming in October. Like, I think
weekend. It's a competition.
It's a competition. And wow. So we're having nationals here in Utah.
Oh, nice.
October 20 something, 22nd or 3rd or something like that.
How do we find out more info about this?
If they just Google Firefighters Challenge.
Salt Lake City?
Yeah. Firefighters Challenge in Sandy, Utah.
Yeah.
They should be able to pull all that up.
But that's wild, dude.
It's,
you said 2 minutes. Yeah, it takes them 2 minutes to do
some,
all that?
Some guys, it takes a minute 20.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
If I could do it in 2 minutes, that'd be unreal. But I'm probably, I want to try. I've never tried it. But if I try it, I'm going to try it.
Wow.
You're going to try it.
I am. This sounds incredibly physical.
Yeah. So do you travel with the team, right?
No.
Okay. So you can come try it.
I'm a left behind guy.
Both BYU and Utah will be out their away games.
Gotcha.
That weekend.
That week.
So come and do it. Let's go do it.
Oh, I'm crazy. I'm traveling with the team that week. I'm just
like, well, it's Wednesday. I know you're not leaving Wednesday.
I want to at least watch, yeah. No, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's a cool
and a great cause.
I'm excited to look for that experience, but it is a great cause, and it speaks to the physique of our firefighters. And
they're, oh, my gosh.
I mean, just
physically, mentally, like you're talking about emotionally.
It's crazy.
Well, that's awesome. Well, Reno, we covered a ton. Thanks for coming in. It's always great to see you. You
thanks
got a big,
me.
Amazing Joseph F. Smith black and gray beard now.
It's to
you're
hide
not that old. You got a little gray. But you're not
to hide
old,
my
man.
Fat face. So until I lose all the weight, I'm not shaving it. I've dropped 50, though.
50?
I'm down 50 pounds since February.
Oh, my gosh. How? Yeah. What have you done?
Just this eating program. So all eating. No, you're not even allowed to work out. All eating.
I think more people need to know about this one. They feel like they have to do all these things, right?
No, this is straight.
You're eating differently.
Eating differently.
Interesting.
Yeah. So.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay,
thanks for having me.
That'll do it for us. Listen to previous episodes of the show on the BYU Radio app or where podcasts are found. For Reno Mahan, producer Trent Reimschussel, I'm Jerem Jordan. You've just listened to Deep Blue on BYU Radio.